After church Sunday, we're hoping to make a lot of invites. We encourage you to ask a lot of people. If none of those ideas help you out any, join us on a week from Wednesday, September 17th. We're going to take some door hangers and just walk door to door to door through some local neighborhoods and just hang invites on the door. They say maybe you get a 1% turnaround on that. So to get one person in church, we need to get to 100 doors. We ordered 400 door hangers, so we hope to get to 400. That means we need to have a big turnout on the 17th. We're not asking you to knock on doors. We're not asking you to have a lot of conversations. You know, if you see someone in the yard, and you can just hand it to them and say, just would like to invite you to our church on Sunday. Not too complicated, not too hard. A little bit of exercise can be a family activity if you want. But it's just one way of spreading the news and something that most of us can participate in. So think about doing that with us. Send letters, send postcards. Becky came up with a pretty good idea this week. We have these cards. I forgot to get one out to show you, but you can take some with you today. Hand them out at work. Oh, here they are. Hand them out at work. You know, give them to neighbors. Take them to the coffee shop. But Becky put together, oh, it's upside down somehow. Craig, how'd you do that? If you flipped it upside down, which we can't do on our software here, is Becky put these together. So she's going to, after church today, go to maybe Big B Coffee or the hardware store and put them on their bulletin board, the local events. And she put a bunch of these at the bottom so they could just be pulled off real quick and people can take them. So it just gives a little extra visibility. So if you know places where maybe you can do that, maybe you could make something like that. Or if you have another idea, let me know and we'll show that next week. All right, but we have two more Sundays and to make that happen. All right. After church that day, we're going to have a taco bar lunch for everyone. There was a sign-up genius that went out in the newsletter yesterday, and we'll send out that link a couple more times. So if you can sign up to bring some food, hoping to need a little more food than usual because we hope to have a big crowd. So yeah, if you can help us out, that'd be great. All right, kids can be dismissed now to Junior Church or Kingdom Kids. One more quick announcement. And Alyssa, you can let me know if you want me to help with this because I know you guys are on the way out today in a hurry, but Alyssa's putting together a promo video for Back to Church Sunday. I want you to answer a question on videotape that will be put out publicly on, you know, Facebook or wherever. You know, what do you like about Tri-County Christian Church? It begins with, we like, we love, whatever, few seconds, and we're just going to put those into a collage. The more faces we can put out there, the better off in terms of reaching people. So if you have time after church today to make that quick video, that would be great too. All right, Chuck Swindoll called loneliness the most desolate word in the world. It is capable of hurling the heaviest weights the heart can endure. Mother Teresa said, "The most terrible poverty I see is loneliness and the feeling of being unwanted." T.S. Eliot spoke from personal experience, and he wrote, "O solitaire, everyone knows what that is like." In fact, playing solitaire, if you will, is common everyday experience for a multitude of lonely people. The career-minded single adult who works all day and then goes home to a microwavable lean cuisine dinner, they play it. An inmate who sits alone in his cell plays it. A uniformed soldier 1,000 miles away from home plays solitaire. A divorcee in a new apartment plays it. The woman who just buried her companion for life. The couple whose arms ache for that child that was recently taken. The successful businessman who might command legions during the day but doesn't have a single friend. They all play solitaire. The stroke victim in the nursing home, the missionary in Somalia, we all play solitaire. I dare say all of us probably play at one time or another, but sometimes others a little more often. I think our music reflects the fact that we're a very lonely people sometimes, probably more so today than before, but even the music I grew up with, just trying to think of a few quick songs, Eleanor Rigby, the Beatles hit, the chorus says, "Oh, look at all the lonely people, where do they come from?" Three Dog Night sang, One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. America saying, this is for all the lonely people, thinking that life has passed them by. I know I'm giving away my age, but I guess it doesn't matter anymore because Becky did that for me publicly this week. I went to the football game, and I realized that when you're 62 or older, you get in for free. So I claimed my free ticket, and Becky was glad to let everyone know that I got that ticket. Billy Joel. Billy Joel saying, they're just sharing a drink they called loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone. Some time ago, someone placed an ad in a Kansas City newspaper, an advertisement that says, I will listen to you for 30 minutes without comment for $5. Sounds like a hoax almost, but that person was serious. It wasn't long before he was taking 10 to 20 calls a day, every day of the week. The pang of loneliness is so sharp that some are willing to try anything for just a half hour of companionship. Probably at some point in your life you've experienced this and you understand what I'm talking about. We live, even in a very connected world, very disconnected lives. I think maybe the elevator is a good microcosm of our society. Ever been in a crowded elevator before? Right? I mean, what do you do in your crowded elevator? You stand there looking at the numbers like you have no idea what's happening in the elevator. You know, it'd be a great place to get together and talk, but we don't do that. We stand together, we watch the numbers like we have no idea where we're going. I like what Tony Campolo said he likes to do in the elevator. He says he gets in a crowded elevator, and he just turns around and smiles broadly at everybody, and then he pushes two consecutive numbers. He pushes the floor where he wants to get off, and he pushes the next one. And then, just before he gets off, he says, I'm a psychopathic killer. And he gets out of the elevator, and he runs up the stairs as quick as he can, so he's there when the doors open again, and he just says, hello, right? But you know how it is in an elevator. You just stand there with a lot of other people, and it's a microcosm of our society. We stand there together, but never touch, never link, never connect. That's the way we live, in isolation, separation, through transition. We say, I'm a rock. I am an island. I declare my independence. I don't need anybody else in life. And we end up lonely. I want you to see what David wrote in Psalm chapter 38, verse 11. Maybe some of you feel this right now. My loved ones and my friends stay away, fearing my disease. Even my own family stands at a distance. Psalm 102, verse 7, I lie awake, I have become like a bird alone on a housetop. He's saying, I'm not connected with anybody. I don't have a friend in the world. I can't say, lean on me to anybody because I don't have anyone to say it to. There's a lot of things that cause loneliness. Transition is one of those things. You know, as we travel through the time of life, we go through these different passages of our lives, and the truth is, as we do that more often, it makes us more lonely, right? We leave behind one thing to something else, and it causes loneliness inadvertently. Some of you right now are setting a plate for one or two when you used to set the table for seven or eight. And the older we get, the more lonely we feel because of those types of transitions. I recently heard of an elderly couple that was sitting together alone in a room, and the husband leaned over and he said, I'm proud of you. And she said, huh? He said, I'm proud of you. She said, what? He said, I'm proud of you. She said, well, I'm tired of you too. And that's just life. The longer you hang around, the more loneliness can set in. Transitions are a huge part of loneliness. But then something else that causes loneliness is separation. I realized this morning that's not going to be on the slide, but you can write it down somewhere. Did you know that one out of five Americans move every single year? I read that recently, and it surprised me. I still can vividly remember, despite my failing memory, that when I came to this church in 1999, my move from Wyandotte to here was one of the loneliest times in my life. I mean, I uprooted from family, from friends, from the church I had grown up with, from the ministry that was really, I was just having a blast in that youth ministry for six consecutive years. And it's only an hour and 15 minutes away, but I basically came here and knew nobody. It was tough at first. Transition and separation can be very difficult. Maybe right now you're feeling kind of disconnected. Started a new job, moved to a new neighborhood, moved to a new school, new job, whatever it is. Someone from your home left to go to college, get married, and you feel so much like a rock or an island, and you're just not connected with anybody the way you used to be. One wife of an executive who had been transferred several times, seven times in 10 years, said, "To avoid the pain of saying goodbye, we no longer say hello." Isolation causes loneliness. We do that to ourselves. We put up transitions. We put up privacy fences around our yard so that no one can see us and we don't have to see them. We don't want anyone to connect us. We have garage door openers so we can literally drive into our, up our driveway and into our garages and shut the door before we have to talk to anyone in the neighborhood. It's like the drawbridge opens, we drive into our castle, the drawbridge closes, and we never connect with anybody. That's kind of the way we've made our society to be. We isolate ourselves, and you say, I would connect with more people, but I'm just too busy. Or, and maybe you know this, I've been burned when I've tried to get close to other people. So we just stay isolated. But that's not the way God designed it to be. In Genesis chapter 2, it says, God looked at man and said, "It's not good that man be alone. I'll make a suitable helper for him." Jethro came to Moses and said, "Moses, you can't keep doing this all by yourself. You've got to get yourself into some relationships, some friends. Have people help you with what you're trying to do. You're going to wear yourself out." William Broyles is a Vietnam veteran. He wrote a book called Brothers in Arms. He writes, "A part of me loved war. A part of me loved war." Now, he said, "Now please understand me. I'm a peaceful man, fond of animals. I believe war shouldn't have any part in the affairs of man. But the camaradeship of our platoon and what we experienced together in that war provides an endearing and moving memory for me. A comrade in war is somebody you trust with anything because he is somebody you've trusted your whole life to. Individual possessions, advantage or stature beforehand count for nothing because the platoon is everything." He wrote, "With platoon members, we would share our food, our rice rations, a single cigarette, and other meals. We would regularly risk our lives for the wounded. We often felt close enough to each other to call ourselves brothers." Yes, there was a depth of feeling there, a real depth of feeling. A part of me loved war. Why would a guy write something like that? Why would he say the depth of feeling that I have is about the experience where a group of guys huddled together, risking their lives together, is the deepest feeling I've ever had? It's because God created us with a deep need for relationships. God created us to be here for one another. He created us for interaction with one another. The truth is, I am not a rock. I am not an island. And I need you. And you need me. We have been created for interdependence. It's nothing new. It's the biblical pattern. Jesus had a platoon. He gathered 12 guys around him, and he's like, "This is my group. I need a platoon." He knew in his human side he needed some interpersonal relationships, so he got this group together. And inside of that platoon, he had three other guys that he was even closer to, generally speaking, than the other nine, Peter, James, and John. The Apostle Paul had a platoon. He gathered some close associates, Titus, Barnabas, Silas, Timothy, John Mark, and he had this group of guys to be his platoon members because he knew he needed the strength of those friends around him and that he could help them out as well. The early church was a model of this platoon life. They didn't have church buildings back then, so they gathered in courtyards or by riverbanks or in the marketplace or the catacombs. They met from home to home. They met wherever they could. Wherever they could huddle a group of people together, they met in these little platoons because they knew that they needed each other. Listen to Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17. As iron sharpens iron, a friend sharpens a friend. Romans 12:10. Love each other with genuine affection. Take delight in honoring each other. Here's what it's saying. The way I created you is so that you would interdepend upon each other. So that you would hook up in some platoon where they can help you, and you can help them, and you can all grow together. And you can sing, "Lean on Me," when you're not strong. And if you need something to carry, I'll carry it for you. And if you just lean on me, I'll be your friend. God knew that we were created for that we would need each other. I think that's why it's one of the core values in being the type of church that I'd like to see us grow to become. Life change happens in platoons, far more so than in a morning worship service. You get a platoon together, and that's how you grow. That's how you grow deeper. That's how you grow stronger. Our goal is to reach people who feel very disconnected from God and from other people, and to bring them into a relationship with Jesus Christ. That is our goal as a church. And then we want to help them turn themselves into a fully developed follower of Jesus. How are we going to do that? That's the question we ask all the time. How can we more effectively reach out to people who don't know Jesus, help them to become to know Jesus, and then go stronger in Him? Well, to do that, we have to build some relationships with non-church people, invite them to services, and then somewhere along the line, they enter into a personal relationship with Christ. But then what do we do? What do we do with those of you who now enjoy that? How do we help you grow? How do we help that new person grow? Do we say, "Well, here's a Bible, read it"? Well, it'd be good if they did. But that's not the end all. Or there's a Christian bookstore down the way. You know, go there, find yourself some good materials. Well, that's good. Reading Christian devotional material is helpful. But we need more. What we've learned, even from our own experience as a church, and by looking at other churches, and by looking at the biblical pattern, is that life change happens best when people are in little platoons. I'm fully convinced that the biblical pattern for growing stronger and deeper is to be in a group of like-minded people. We call our platoons here in our church small groups, or Bible studies, or men's ministries, or ladies' ministries, or Sunday school. A small group is a place where you can come together and do the one another phrases that the Bible commands us to do. To love one another, to care for one another, to be kind to one another, to forgive one another, to bear one another's burdens. Now, can you realistically love every member in the church? Can you realistically care for every member in the church? Well, we're not that big of a church, so maybe it's a little easier. We all know each other's names, but the truth is we're all a little bit different. We're different in age, we're different in stature, we're different in our Christian maturity, we're different in our likes and our dislikes. I think so much different that we can't all have interpersonal relationships that are strong with one another. But you can love about 5 or 10, can't you? You can get close to 5 or 10, can't you? I mean, really do the one another phrases. Really do the one another things that Christ tells us we're supposed to do with other Christians. You know, get into their life as a platoon member and help them grow and to spur them on to love and to good deeds and to Christian works and to forgive them and to be kind to them and to help them forgive others and to be kind to others. You can do that. You can do that with 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 other people. I think we learn to do this best in small groups. Hebrews 10:24 says, "Think of ways to encourage one another to outbursts of loves and good deeds." one of the ways I can think of is to get into a small group and be active with that group and do those things. Not only are you able to better care for one another in a small group or a small platoon, but you can help people learn better in that setting. In fact, there have been small groups that have met in the past when I've been asked to provide them my sermon topic in advance or the scripture we're going to study so they can study it in a small group and be better prepared. They said they learned a lot more from the sermon when they thought about it in advance. These people insisted they learned much more about the sermon topic when they studied together. You know, small groups help you grow deeper. They also help you grow stronger together. You learn best that way. There's something about sitting around a table with a few friends and say, what do you think about this? What did you learn from this passage? How can this passage change your life? What do you think about what the preacher said on Sunday? You know, you can be in a church on a Sunday service and have a question. You might have one now. But you can't just raise your hand and say, excuse me, can you stop there? I don't understand. That would not be appropriate, so don't start doing that, right? But in a small group, you can talk. You can grow deeper. You can have feedback back and forth. You can probe. You can actually be implanted in a pot where you can bloom and start to blossom. That's what small group settings are all about. That's why we have Sunday school and men's and ladies' ministries and men's breakfast and all of those other smaller group settings. I had a small group for a long time, and it was a great thing. There was great accountability in a small group. There's great growth that happens in a small group. It's a place where you can come in and say, I'm struggling on how to do this. I'm struggling with this part of the Christian life. I'm struggling with this topic. Can you help me understand it better? What about you? What do you need? We learn from each other. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. I know of a preacher, a friend of mine, who's in a church with about 5,000 in attendance, yet the people in that church grow deep, and they attribute it to the small groups. Everyone in that church of 5,000 is encouraged to be in a group of 10. Two different people in that church wrote articles that they published in their church letters who encourage others to join small groups. I want to read you what these two people wrote because I just think it underscores this whole idea so well. One lady wrote, I'm writing today to share with you what being involved in a small group meant to me. I was the divorced mother of two teenage girls, and I felt desperate. I came crawling into a small group hoping to find a friend and someone who would pray with me and for me. Before I started the group, I was hurt, I was angry, I was frustrated. The leaders of my group shared biblical teachings that I could hold on to and gave me so much hope in trying times. My small group developed into deep, caring, understanding friendships that are irreplaceable. Above all, it was a safe place to share your deepest feelings and to get honest. I was amazed how much I had in common with these people. It was great to connect with others that I could relate with. I'm so thankful for the vision of this church that has given help to hurting people. Through God's grace, I'm a changed person. Thank you for promoting small groups. And then there was a gentleman who wrote, when I first came to church, it was the first time I had stepped in a church in 24 years apart from a funeral or wedding. My wife and I slipped in and out quietly for 4 years. We developed no friendships. Our growth in Christ was practically zero. We finally made a commitment to get involved in a Sunday school group, and one of the members of that class reached out to us and invited us to their home to have a small group in their home. And through that outreach, we decided to get involved in a midweek small group. Our first attempt was not successful, but we tried another. And through the love, support, and encouragement that we received from them, my wife and I and one of the other couples decided to form a new group to reach out to people who were not connected with any other class and share our blessings with them. Many of us became involved in men's groups and ladies' groups. Our group, listen to this, our group made a commitment of bringing at least one new family to Christ each year and every 3 years beginning a new group. In the past 10 years, we've passed our expectations, and through our small groups that we created, we have seen 45 people won to Christ and 6 new groups started. We've experienced the grace, openness, support, trust, and accountability and confidentiality that you can only have in a small group setting, and we've grown from that. And through our growth, we've learned that we need to share with others the grace that we've been shown. He went on and said, our groups have helped groom elders, deacons, ushers, new Sunday school teachers. I've learned the meaning of vulnerability, accountability, grace, forgiveness, unconditional love, and through these relationships, which exemplify God's love in a very tangible way, and I thank God for every member of our small groups. I encourage all of you who are not involved in a Christ-centered small group to get involved. If your first attempt fails, like ours did, try again until you succeed. Okay, that was long, longer than I usually read in terms of someone's correspondence, but it's good. Our church is a lot smaller than that. We don't have a lot of choices, but we need to offer as many options as we can for growth, and you as individuals need to take advantage of as many options as you can, even if it's only one. Imagine if we had a small group and did what that couple did, and that small group, maybe just six families, maybe just four families, if they all committed to bring in a new family during the year, those four families could very quickly turn into 16 people. In 3 years, 48 people. And because of that one group, you've doubled the size of the church. If two groups did that, within 2 years' time, we would have outgrown our auditorium. And that all represents souls being introduced to Jesus Christ. So I really encourage you, come to Sunday school, go to a ladies' ministry, go to men's group, come on Wednesday night and study the Bible with us this fall. If all else fails and you can't do any of that, start a small group at your home and invite another family to join you. Small groups all over the world literally help each other. See, we can come to church like a bag of marbles, where we all look nice and shiny and just click against one another. Or we can come to church like a bag of grapes, where we kind of get smashed and bruised and all the juices start flowing together because of those interpersonal I don't know if that's a great sounding illustration or not, but the idea is togetherness, where we all come together with a common purpose and under a common theme, which is Jesus Christ. As a very young Christian, I was involved in a small group that met every week on Saturday mornings for breakfast at Big Boy. And I can tell you, that particular Big Boy in Wyandotte, the food was terrible, the coffee was terrible, but the fellowship of this group was so good that we kept going back to this terrible, dungy Big Boy every single Saturday. And we had some good conversations, we had some good ministry. The one that came to mind this week while I was thinking about this is a guy named Jeff. He said, my biggest problem in life is that my life is so crazy. I'm always going so fast. I feel like I'm losing it here. I'm not enjoying time anywhere. This was the guy who always left the small group first. He was out the door quickest. He'd get in his car. You could almost sometimes hear him squeal away from the parking lot so he could get to work as quick as he could. We planned in advance one Sunday to follow him out. We got to our cars, and we kind of blocked the roadway all along the path down Northline Road through Wyandotte so he couldn't get in this lane or that lane. He had to go 35 miles an hour for the next 5 or 6 miles. Just kind of boxed him in to slow him down a little bit. But that's the accountability that you can create in a small group. It helps you grow. You know, it's easier to work out with somebody. It's easier to run with somebody. It's easier to diet with somebody. And it's easier to grow as a Christian with somebody because God has designed us for interpersonal relationships. He's designed us to help each other. And if at any point you think, I'm doing great, my spiritual life is great, I've gotten to where I ought to be, or I'm close to where I ought to be, I don't really need anyone else's help right now, I promise you there are 10 other people that need your help then. Get involved. If you don't need the help, get involved to help someone else. And if you need the help, get involved so other people can help you. That's what God has designed us for, and it's what he's designed the church for. Maybe someone just needs a friend. So maybe someone out there that we don't even know in our church yet needs a friend. I guarantee you that's the case, right? We started this message talking about loneliness. There's a lot of lonely people, and that loneliness might be the ticket needed to bring them to a friendship and relationship with Jesus Christ. Let me challenge you today to determine that you're going to get involved with a small group of people. Get involved with a group of people. Find a way to do it in our church. Tuesday nights for ladies, Wednesday, Monday afternoons for men. one Saturday a month for men's breakfast, Wednesday nights for Bible study. Find a way to get involved or start a group in your home and invite one other family. Two families can make up a group, right? But get connected. You know, some of you who are extroverted, start fishing for people. Look for new people that don't even come to church yet. Invite them over to your home for a meal and share gospel truth with them. Would you like to come to our Sunday school class? Ask them. Just get connected because we're designed to grow like that. That's how we grow as people. That's how we grow as Christians. That's how we will grow as a church. I need you. You need me. And they need us. I'll never forget the story that John Bell told. He was the past president of Special Olympics. He told about a 100-yard dash where eight Special Olympians lined up at the starting blocks. They all got their bodies in the starting blocks and the starting position, and the guy in charge raised the pistol and said, "Ready, set, boom." And they all took off running, elbows and knees flying everywhere. And about eight steps into the race, one of these little boys fell on the cinder track. The other seven stopped, turned around, came back, picked him up, brushed off his elbows and knees. They linked arms together, and they walked down the rest of that track together, and they all crossed the tape at the same time and all became winners. And some people might think, well, that's not the point of the race. That's not very intelligent. That's what we've got to do. We've got to have people who will pick us up, people who will dust us off, people who will link arms with us and say, "Lean on me when you're not strong. I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on." That's what we've got to do. That's what God's created us for. We are not a rock. We are not an island. I need you. You need me. And they need us.